Thanks for tuning into the Let's Talk podcast. My name is Christopher, and I'm the Director of Marketing and Communications for the National Runaway Safe Line, or NRS. At NRS, we operate the federally designated national communication system for youth who have run away, are experiencing homelessness, or who may be considering leaving home. For over 50 years, we've provided crisis support and resources for young people, families, and communities across the nation. I hope you learn as much as I do on this journey to elevate the voices of young people and youth-facing organizations as they share their stories and highlight the complexities and intersections witnessed by 4.2 million young people facing homelessness each year. For week 3 of National Runaway Prevention Month, we are joined by Kayla Reno and Hannah Portwood from Midwest Youth Services. Welcome, friends. Let's start with some introductions, shall we?
My name is Kayla Reno, and I am the Youth Program Supervisor at Midwest Youth Services. And I joined Midwest Youth Services about three and a half years ago, after working alongside of them for about 5 years doing mental health crisis intervention. I did a lot of follow-up services and case management services for youth in the area, specifically with mental health. So with that, CCBYS, homeless youth, the BCP program, all of those things line up, with the same population. So I was working a lot with the kids that Midwest Youth Services was working with. And so I just got to a point where I was like, I like what they're doing and I'm going to jump on board. So I took the plunge and I've been here since. I've done, 12, 13 years of youth activities, coaching. I've done a couple of inner city programs. I just have a passion for youth. So it just really lined up with what Midwest Youth Services does and continues to do.
And our second guest.
My name is Hannah Portwood, and I am a youth case manager here at Midwest Youth Services. I started about, 3 years ago as a part-time crisis intervention worker. During that time, I kind of got some experience of working with the youth and kind of seeing what Midwest Youth Services was all about. While I was part-time, I was also a substance abuse counselor out at the prison here in Jacksonville, and I was kind of getting backstories from some of these clients that I had about what their home life was like when they were kids and the experiences they were having. And after working part-time as a crisis intervention worker, I really wanted to put my time into helping youth kind of stay out of the juvenile justice system and not end up in prison like the people I had been working with. So that really drew me, and just kind of the overall mission of Midwest Youth Services and what they're all about. Kind of like Kayla was saying, I took the plunge and I'm really happy doing what I'm doing and working with people who are very passionate about youth and kind of keeping families together.
Since you brought up the mission, for anyone who's not familiar with Midwest Youth Services, can you explain what the mission and vision of the organization is, please?
Yeah, so overall, our mission is to divert youth from the juvenile justice system as well as the child welfare system, while also helping to strengthen and restore families. So a big part of what we're doing, not only is it to prevent, obviously, youth getting into trouble and becoming part of the system, but also that family piece is a really big part of what we do. We want to reunify our kids with family, and kind of everything that goes into that, kind of we do here, working on that with counseling.
You brought up something that I'm thankfully hearing more and more about, which is including a justice component along with the diversity, equity, and inclusion work that you do. There are some well-known systemic barriers that it sounds like you're working to help people overcome. Can you talk about some of the other programs that you offer at Midwest Youth Services?
Yeah, so it's going to be kind of hard to sum up because we do a lot of different things here. We actually have 5 programs that are state funded, and then we have the federal basic center program. So within those 5 programs, to sum it up, we provide case management services, we provide counseling. It's for youth ages 9 through 24, just across the board between all of the different programs. So within each of the programs, the age is a little bit different. However, like I said, it's mostly case management services. We offer 24/7 crisis intervention services. We do have an emergency shelter for youth. So if we do have a runaway or a youth who is not feeling safe at home, or they're couch surfing or homeless and need somewhere to be, we do have a 24-hour shelter. So we do offer those same services for the kids that are in the shelter. We promote, you know, positive youth development. We give them opportunities for restorative practices. So through our community service program, kids might have, you know, a offense of disorderly conduct or something, and the city will ticket them. And instead of the kid paying a fine, they have a restorative practice of completing community service hours. And we report that to the court. We report their behavior. We report, you know, how many hours they did. Were they respectful? Are they learning skills? And then once they're complete, they're rewarded not only by completing their community service, but they also get a celebration kind of within the program too. So we offer a lot of different things.
I love that. Earlier, I said you guys were breaking down systemic barriers, but you're also acting as a barrier between young people and the court system, or a criminal record in some cases. You help this court establish good faith.
Yes, we are very fortunate to have a very strong partnership with the local municipal court and law enforcement. We get a lot of referrals from them for all of our programs. So our homeless program, our runaway program, all of these things, we have a very strong connection with the local law enforcement.
Do you have any idea how this awesome relationship with the local municipal court came about?
Well, our now director was a case manager at one point, and she's just, you know, ever evolving with programs, and she sees a need and she tries to fill the gap. And there's just a lot of different conversations that happen in our community, and we have a lot of collaborative meetings and things like that. And I think it just came about in that sense. I mean, I don't necessarily supervise that program, so I don't know the ins and outs of how it came to be, but I know that it was likely due to a collaborative conversation of, okay, how do we find these kids upstream instead of reacting down the road? And we have, like I said, great relationships with the judge that does municipal court and then the law enforcement officers. So I think it was just a natural thing to have us be involved.
So like many good things, it all started out as a conversation, of course.
Yeah.
You mentioned working with youth as young as 9 years old. Have you always worked with such a young age group?
Yeah, so our federal grant, our basic center program, that is ages 9 through 17. So as long as we have that funding and that grant, then we will continue to serve that 9 and 10-year-old population. And then our state grants start at age 11.
I'm curious, do you guys receive a lot of contacts from young people who are in need, or is it mostly concerned adults who are reaching out to Midwest Youth Services?
So I feel like typically we get more concerned adults, such as police officers, staff at school, teachers, parents, family, friends, municipal court, like you were saying. We do get some young people that reach out, but typically we see more from a concerned adult. Sometimes it's kind of the extra push and connection that a youth needs when they don't have the opportunity or even the words sometimes to ask for help. So we do get a lot of concerned adults that refer to our programs, and that gets us in contact with the youth and able to start services up with them when they maybe don't know how to ask for it themselves.
Can you give me an example of why a concerned adult may reach out to Midwest Youth Services?
Yeah, so I'd say typically we get behavioral issues at school, maybe some academic issues. Family conflict at home is a big one. Just maybe a youth needing some positive support. Maybe they don't have that currently, and they're just needing someone who's consistent and someone that cares about their well-being to step in and just say, hey, I'm here for you, and I want to help you with what I can. But also sometimes we do get kids connected to other community resources, whether that be mental health. That's not something that we do here as services, but we have the connections so that if a kid is struggling with mental health, we have a direct contact to help them get referred and set up with services so all their needs are being met beyond what we can just do here.
Another reason that a youth could be referred is if they are couch surfing or homeless, maybe they're displaced. So just because a kid is staying with an aunt doesn't mean the aunt wants the kid there. So at times we'll get referrals, you know, that a kid is at risk of being homeless because family doesn't want them there or they're staying with different friends. So a lot of referrals come through with youth who do not have a fixed address or a stable place to lay their head every night.
And in the event that a youth does contact you directly in need, is the expectation the same as it is for a concerned adult?
I would say typically they're about the same expectation-wise. When an adult is reaching out to us, there's maybe another step in there that they're kind of passing the information along about the youth, some basic demographic information and contact information so that we are able to get in contact with that youth to get services set up. But basically, we collect that information to create a referral. After that, the referrals get divvied out by the supervisor to a case manager. After that, a case manager will then reach out to the youth themselves or the parent or guardian to set up an appointment to get intake paperwork started and making sure we're getting all the consent signed needed to kind of perform our services and do so in a confidential way.
And I will add to, you know, the youth that do self-refer, they know that they can show up here and we're going to respond. So if they come in and they don't have an appointment and they're in a crisis or if they need someone to talk to, someone's going to be there to talk to them. Like, we're not going to turn them away. So I think with, you know, so we opened our youth shelter less than a year ago. And since opening that shelter, we've housed roughly 16 or 17 kids. And I don't think that that would have been the case if it was the prior year. I think that the shelter has drawn more kids to us. More kids are curious. The kids that are using the shelter are then turning around and sharing with their friends. So then their friends are calling or their friends' parents are calling, hey, can we get some services in place? So-and-so really benefited from your case management or your shelter or whatever it might have been. So there is more word of mouth happening, and we are actually in the process of becoming a certified safe place. So we're really hoping, yes, we're really hoping that we're going to have more kids that just, you know, show up, that they are comfortable to just be who they are and let us meet them where they're at.
I'm with you. I think there's a common theme with the most recent episodes of Let's Talk, which is meeting young people where they are. How do you navigate different communication styles? Like, you wouldn't talk to a 17-year-old the same way that you would talk to a 10-year-old.
Yeah, so obviously you don't want to talk above them. So if you are dealing with a 9, 10, 11-year-old, it's going to be very different than dealing with a 16, 17, 18-year-old. I think here what makes us kind of stand out is that our case managers and our staff, like, we are very client-centered. And we're going to meet that kid where they are. So we build a relationship with them, and that is the first step to anything. So if you have an 11-year-old, you're not just diving in and, okay, this is your case plan, this is what we expect of you. They're spending time getting to know that kid so that they do know how to communicate specifically with that youth. And same goes with the older kids. You know, some of them think they're grown. They're not, but sometimes you got to talk to them like they're grown because otherwise they're not going to hear you. So I think it's just, there's no specific way to do it. I think it's just so specific to the kid.
This reminds me of something that I saw on your website, which was the positive youth development approach. Can you tell us a little bit about that approach and the successes that you've had?
Yeah, so the positive youth development approach, it's really designed to engage youth in all aspects of their community. So you want it to be in a way that's productive while also validating each youth's strength during that time and encouraging those positive outcomes for each youth. So it's really kind of going, kind of what Kayla said, off of it, each youth is different. So each youth's strength is going to play a specific part in kind of that approach and how we develop that. And I would say that basically we want the community to be involved and we want the youth to want to be involved in the community. So approaching it in a way that's showing them like, hey, this is what your community is offering, and doing so in a way that's like drawing on their strengths is a big thing, because a lot of times we see a lack of self-confidence in kids. And I think being able to highlight their strengths and how that is impactful in the community is really important in their development as a youth.
And another big part of positive youth development is, you know, there are so many youth that come through the systems and everybody focuses on the risks. You know, what is their background? What did they come from? What got them to this point? You know, we are so quick to judge in our society, and the positive youth development kind of forces you to take a step back and say, okay, there might be this really huge risk factor, but what protective factors do we have in place? So for example, if you have, let's say, a young man who is on probation because he threw a rock at a window, okay, he can very quickly be labeled a bad kid. Oh, that's a bad kid. He's a troublemaker, whatever, whatever. Well, positive youth development is going to look at that situation and say, hey, you got a good arm. Let's sign you up for baseball. You know, that's a strength. And that's kind of a, you know, cheesy analogy, but really it's taking, okay, this is the mistake you made. This is the risk factor. And what protective factors do we have? Do we have a supportive family? Do we have a strong desire to do well in school? Do we have the need or the friendliness to where he could be really great on a team? Let's sign him up for this, you know, putting those supports in place so that they can thrive, like Hannah said, off of their strengths instead of focusing on that one thing that they did wrong that could label them and change the trajectory of their life.
Well, and going off that, I still remember kids that I grew up with that made a mistake, and that has stuck with them. And it's like, at what point are we able to kind of move past that and focus on the positive things that they've done? And I think that's something we deal with a lot with the clients that we have. They're really focused too on the negative, and sometimes they don't have somebody there to kind of push past the negative and look for a positive. So
that's so awesome. I think so many young people misplace their talents and their energy in this way. So simply redirecting them instead of reprimanding them or jumping to conclusions or labeling them, it really will go a long way in building trust. Kind of in that same vein, can you talk about the ADHD Child's Bill of Rights?
The ADHD Child's Bill of Rights is pretty much just a guideline and a toolkit for parents who struggle with parenting a child with ADHD because they are more challenging typically because you can't parent them the same way you would a child without ADHD. So the Bill of Rights basically just goes through and quotes, you know, alternative ways to handle a situation for a child with ADHD.
Well, and I feel like it draws into the positive youth development that mm-hmm. we were just talking about because it's maybe taking something that they don't find as a strength and turning it into a strength. So things like positively redirecting that kid, like, hey, that's a good idea. Why don't we put it in this way? Why don't we think about it this way? Or refocusing them while being supportive and learning to understand their perspective is a big thing in turning that into a strength instead of looking at it as a negative.
But seriously, where were you guys when I was a kid? I mean, I totally get it now because I'm an adult. I've been through therapy and I've had to mm-hmm. unpack all of this. But as a kid, I blamed myself for what I perceived as a problem when what I really needed was for someone to sit down and talk to me like a human and help me redirect that energy or unpack certain traumas. Since we're talking about youth justice again, are there any misconceptions about youth and justice or young people dealing with the justice system?
I think that very quickly, kids are labeled as bad the second that they have any involvement with the justice system. And that's not taken lightly for them, for their families, for their friends, for their schools. I mean, you can have a kid that they make one mistake and all of a sudden, oh, they're bad because they have involvement with the police. So I think a lot of people just jump to that conclusion. And we're really trying to combat that with the different programming here.
Do you have any advice for organizations who are looking to implement this positive youth development approach?
I mean, speaking of my opinion, I feel like it's something that's a practiced behavior. So it's not something that you're just going to be able to pick up and implement right away. It's something that takes like consistency and you want, it takes a want to learn that and to practice that and to preach it. So I think that anybody who's wanting to implement that, I think it's a really great approach. And I think it's useful not just for the youth that you're dealing with, but also in your day-to-day life. I see a lot of things differently since implementing this and learning more about it through working for Midwest Youth Services, but I definitely think it's important to be able to really practice what you're preaching and really take the time to look for a positive instead of focusing on the negative. And kind of like Kayla was saying, a label follows kids around. So trying to break that labeling system, I think, is really important because that then breaks the misconception that all kids are bad if they make a mistake.
For the person who isn't involved in the homeless community or the juvenile justice community or the child welfare community, what are the ways that they can get involved to support your organization, besides the obvious, like, financial support?
I think just getting involved. I think it's very easy to sit back and judge, or even to sit back and let other people do the work, like, oh, there's counselors for that, or, oh, there's, you know, people who deal with those types of kids. But being okay with just walking past a kid that looks like they're struggling and saying hello, hey, how are you doing today? You know, not treating them like it's taboo to have a conversation with a young person. You don't have to sit and have an in-depth conversation, but they're a human being. And you're going to pour into them, and they're going to feel that, and they're going to build confidence, and in return, they're going to build trust into their community. So, yes, financial help is always nice, but really just knowing that there are positive adults out there that are willing to speak, you know, positive things into our youth, I think that's important.
And I also think that word of mouth, like Kayla was mentioning earlier, is really important for our services, because we get a lot of referrals from word of mouth. Like Sue was mentioning, someone had a really positive experience with our case management. Somebody had a really positive experience with our community service program. I mean, those things really promote us and what we're doing, as well as social media. I mean, we kind of have hit the ground pretty hard here recently, obviously, for National Runaway Prevention Month, on getting the word out. And I think people seeing those things and sharing those things, that's a really great way to help support us and what we're trying to do in the community.
It totally goes back to, like, not talking over the youth, but talking to them. So many hotlines and similar programs have relied on word of mouth for decades, but we have this amazing and often overlooked resource for meeting young people where they are, which is social media. I'm a huge advocate for talking directly to a young person and asking them what exactly is that they need in their own words, instead of just assuming what they need. Okay, so I want to change gears just a little bit to talk about National Runaway Prevention Month before we finish up here, because your organization is one who I had to really take a step back and say, damn, I am going to have to do so much more next year to keep up. Can you talk about how you've benefited from NRPM in the past and what your past NRPM campaigns have looked like?
I think NRPM is highly looked forward to here because we have a very busy staff, and everybody is kind of going at the pace that they need to for their youth and their clients. And we don't have a whole lot of time to, like, blast about ourselves. And so NRPM, I feel like, is a great time to be like, look, there are these kids here. Because I think in rural communities, homelessness and runaways look so different than what it would in a more urban place. And so it gives us an opportunity to educate our communities. We, you know, share our numbers from the previous years. We usually use those numbers to, like, do something creative so that it really sparks interest of, well, what does that mean? And why are they doing that? And then it just leads to more questions and more, I don't know, more eyes on us, to where people can see what we're doing, that leads to more youth also seeing what we're doing. So we really utilize NRPM as a way to connect to, obviously, the community and sharing who we are. But it's also a really cool way to see that we're not alone in this. Like, there are so many other agencies and missions and all these other things going on that are in line with what we're doing. So we're not isolated. You know, we're not alone. This is national. This is not just us. So it's just in those two different ways, we really look forward to it every year.
And looking forward. Looking forward to how are we going to up the ante. I mean, one thing about this agency is we don't like to stay stagnant. I would say that we always are looking to grow and kind of continue growing. And so I think that's kind of the things that I'm looking forward to continuing to see how NRPM grows and what it's going to look like next year.
You ladies should feel so proud because we really can't help but notice how massive and meticulously planned and well catered your campaign is. I think when this episode airs, we'll be about halfway through NRPM. Are there any favorite events or events that you're looking forward to this year?
So we actually are obviously wearing green today because it's Wear Green Day. I see you're green too. Today we actually distributed green socks to all of the local law enforcement. So we have multiple pictures that are being posted on our social media of officers wearing green socks. And we even got a couple of pictures. I think they were recently posted, but you know, they made sock puppets out of their socks. And it's just super cool because not only does it show the relationship that we have with law enforcement, but it makes them more human, which makes them more approachable to the youth that need to access our services through law enforcement. So that was a really fun thing that we were doing this year is the whole sock thing. And we're also lighting the Ferris wheel
That's
again.
That's what I was going to say.
So it's green the whole month of November.
Yes, I love the Ferris wheel and seeing like all the different types of structures that people are able to get lit up for NRPM. Seeing different buildings and things like that in green is always really cool. Okay, I have one last question before we wrap up here. How do you incorporate the youth voice into your campaign and to what you do in general?
I mean, I feel like it's really important in hearing back from the youth, right? So we're working with these youth and we want to hear how our services are helping them or something that maybe we can improve on or something that they feel like their community is lacking that maybe we could speak more on and even provide more resource for. So we definitely take feedback given by the youth to better serve our community. And I think that in order to do our job in a way that is successful and beneficial and productive, it really draws off of the youth and the youth's experience. I mean, I could feel like I'm doing the best job ever, but if it's not getting through to the youth or the youth feels that we're still lacking in a certain area, I mean, that's important because overall, my main concern is the youth and how their experience is going and how that's impacting their community. So without taking the feedback, I don't feel like we grow and we progress the way that we need to and the way that we currently are.
And we're constantly asking for feedback, you know, so we have a youth group that's on the Jacksonville Youth for Change, and they meet and they discuss, you know, hot topics. They discuss what they think that their schools need. They discuss what they think that their peers need. And we have people that lead that and they bring it to community leaders, you know, at their meetings. And we'll say, this is what the youth at the local high school says that we need to benefit youth. So not only on a Midwest Youth Services scale, but we're really trying to get these kids to speak up for themselves and realize like they do have the power to impact the outcomes of the kids in our community. And eventually these kids are going to be the adults in our community. So letting them have some buy-in is really important. And first and foremost, you know, Midwest Youth Services, we are trauma-informed. And it goes back to that person-centered approach. No, we're going to treat every kid the way they need to be treated in that moment. And they're either going to be shell-shocked, like, what are you doing? You know, why are you offering me hot chocolate or, you know, whatever it is. Or they're going to be so grateful and just pour out to you immediately and be like, wow, you're actually listening. So
it's important for the youth that we work with to know that their voice has merit and it matters because I feel like sometimes that gets lost in their day-to-day lives. So making sure that they know their voice is heard and is appreciated.
And we're not just trying to tell them what to do. We're trying to help them be better for themselves and have a better outcome.
Thank you so much for tuning in again this week for the Let's Talk podcast. For more information on Midwest Youth Services, visit mys-kids.org or check out the description for this episode. We have two more episodes during National Runaway Prevention Month, so I'll see you here again next Thursday.